Yeah, it's very interesting. When you go up to the house, it's big. Well, I don't know what it really means. I probably do because some of them come down to the home, and I just put them up.
Okay, you tell us something about your, when you met your husband, his name, and where you met, and the courtship, and where you married, and where you met.
Oh, his name is Daniel. He has a middle name, so it came to him. What he ever uses it. And I met him about a week or two after I was graduated from high school. And as it happened, we only lived about 3 or 4 blocks from each other. And although I was going out with him, I went out with him together. It wasn't a fashion to go to bed, and he was very, very high day. And we went out with him. That was quite good to go out with him when he was young. And I did, and it didn't get serious until, I would say, 1934, when we were engaged. And we were married in 1935. We went to Florida on our honeymoon, and our honeymoon was a story in itself, because we had bought a second-hand car from a coupe, I think it was a 32. But we found out later by examining the car thoroughly that it belonged to a salesman, which my husband is now, and I know his mileage they put on him. I can understand why the car is changed it here. We had trouble from the very beginning. It seemed the car, they didn't have Preston in those days, but they put alcohol in cars in winter to warm car, whatever Preston does for a car. And it became very warm the day after we were married. And every few hours, and this continued throughout the trip, the car would bubble up. The engine would bubble up, and it would overheat him, and we'd have to stop. And it took us a week to get to Miami. And we had so many experiences on the way. I remember the gas gauge didn't work in the car, so we ran out of gas frequently. We were down, I should say, up in the hills of Tennessee, and the car did the same thing across the road, and we coasted down the mountain. And by that time, since the car started again, it was quite late, we slept in the shack with rain pouring in on us all night. And then the next day, people were beside a car and they motioned for us to stop at the hotel. Well, we would leave with all the money we had. This was in Georgia. And we had to wait a couple of hours until the telegraph office opened again. And I remember this so vividly. We had to wire his dad for money, and we were hungry. And I found 37 cents in my bag. And just remember what 37 cents was in the bag. We got a half a pound of ham, and 4 rolls, and 2 drinks for 37 cents. And that was our meal for the day, because we didn't get the money until about 5 or 5:30 in the evening. And we were quite disgusted at this point, that we decided, since we were so far, we may as well go on. So we went to Florida for the weekend, I always say, on our honeymoon. We got there Saturday morning and left Monday morning and came home. On the way home, we hit one of those dust storms you read about. And it was 30. And a few other little things happened. We came home a little faster than going down there, but it was quite eventful. Very vividly.
Then where? Did you come back to Chicago? Or did
no. You as I said before, my husband's father and another man had a shoe factory, which was based in Chicago, but then they went out on strike when all these strikes were taking place. And these small towns were so, they were in such bad shape, they were offering people who were in the manufacturing line to give them these plants after they paid a certain amount out in wages so that the town could thrive a little bit after being very, very down and up. So this is what happened in Pontiac, Illinois. They had a brand new, almost brand new factory there. And after a certain number of years and a certain amount of wages paid to people who live in the town and work as staff to be owned with it. And these arrangements were quite common. It's all over the country, certainly in Illinois. And the Pioneer Gold Mine is a small town about 100 miles from Chicago. Joliet, Illinois, which is halfway between, always had the big criminals, Pontiac, Illinois, as well as the juvenile. And there were 3,000 prisoners there and 3,000 people, so you know, at the time. And if you didn't drive, you walked. And we lived there for a year and a half, and it's funny how I made a complete turn. We started out, we had no furniture, so we went to the furnished apartment, which was very easily, in Chicago, we really loved them. They sure we had quite some time. And finally ended up in the Aberdeen, which is a block down from here. As I say, we made a wide circle from back to where we started. And we lived there for a month, and when I finally made a few friends, I knew that most of the young Jewish people lived in Squirrel Hill. So we took an apartment in Squirrel Hill for another day, and we lived with the old window for the building across from the window. We lived there until, my daughter was born when I was in 1939.
When did your daughter's name?
Jill.
Jill.
Yeah. Her name is Jill, I think, today. She was in the house. Anyway. She was born, and then we moved to Lower Beechwood Boulevard, right across the parkway, which of course was not there at the time. And my daughter always asked me if everyone in Pittsburgh lived down there at that time, because whenever she meets someone, she knows her from down on Lower Beechwood Boulevard. They had those duplexes and double houses down there, and we were all about the same age, and I think it was about the most wonderful time of our lives, because as I say, our children were all the same age, we were the same age, and we did things together. And some of my best friends are still friends from those days. And we lived there until 1946, when we brought home the Upper Beach, across from St. Olney's, and we lived there until 1962. And what do you want me to go on from there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
1962, my daughter had gotten married in 1960, so 1962 we sold our house. And we lived in California for about 5 years, and we all lived out the second of the village in the building, so we moved into this apartment in 1967.
You have really been from Oakland to Squirrel Hill?
That's right.
Tell me, when you became involved, how and when you became involved in organization? Tell me what you were trying before we started the tape. And how you feel about
I joined the organization for two reasons. One, to meet people, and two, because I felt that I had to do something outside of the home, but I also felt that I wasn't qualified for anything particular. So this was a logical thing to do, particularly at that time. Although it's a number of years ago and people forget that I was one of the first at the beginning of the Women's Division of the Jewish Fund, I remember that if we got a donation from a woman for $5 that time, I still lived down Lower Beach Boulevard, children, youngsters. And then they started, I remember the first luncheon, the Women's Division, which was a minimum of $25. And I was surprised at the number of $25 and we got because I guess it was things to this luncheon. And that was, luncheon really was the beginning of the women's author books for more than just their children.
Remember the year that luncheon was
taken? Well, it had to be before 1946 because I was in 1946. So it was somewhere where I would say in the 44. And I remember who, it's funny how certain things you do remember. I remember Elliot Roosevelt was the featured speaker at the luncheon. Of course, he was around the time because Roosevelt was still living. And he said, I don't know whether he was or not. I think he had just died. It must have been in 45 or 46, because I think he had just died. And Truman was president, and he was talking about the Greece and Turkey, that we had done the right thing with Greece and Turkey. They were therefore our allies, and they were taking up the right shape of the other Turkey countries. I mean, this was all history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's history now, I mean, but yeah. It was all taking place. And I know that every Friday it took place to study whether it was for a Jewish cause or for a community cause, up and down the steps.
There, I used to know. Now, you were talking about every drive, you were up and down the steps.
Right.
And that was in the 40s.
When I came to Pittsburgh, Mother had a friend in Chicago whose sister lived here, and her name was Mrs. Harris. At that time, there were a few credit clothing stores. There was the Palace Credit Clothing Store and the Harris, which was across the street from the Palace. And Mrs. Harris were an elderly couple, childless. And she took me under her wing. She happened to be president of Ladies Auxiliary Jewish Home, what was Jewish Home for Ages at the time. And she had been president for 25 years. And there was also, I remember, Mrs. Walter, who was the trustee, and she was quite brilliant for me because she had a chauffeur and a car at her disposal, and she picked this up for me. And as I said, there was maybe 10, 15 women who ran the auxiliary, and Mrs. Harris, their own fund, used to have big membership parties to bring a Penn Hotel, paid for everything herself. And although the auxiliary had a large membership for an organization at that time, still it did not have a membership. So there was really a need for young blood, and Mrs. Harris had been very nice to me. Became very great personal friends, almost as if she was. I probably think she's a lot older than she really was because I was so young at the time. And so I became interested. And I also worked at the hospital life. I was very interested in the Council of Jewish Women's Organization at the time. I remember we had a convention here at the Wing of Penn. We worked very hard on that. The national convention. And I was interested in the council because they brought wonderful speakers at that time. And later on, I joined the New Brit group, and I think that was one of my interests.
The feeling that you had, as you mentioned before the tape got started, would you repeat that on the tape, about this feeling of service, a specific service out of the home that you found life?
Well, I felt that it wasn't glamorous, particularly in those days, because the home was run at that time not by a qualified social worker, who was the brilliant man that we have today, Dr. Kelsen, who was quite a figure in the community, and who just received his doctorate for a program called NASH, in which the residents of the home feel quite helpful, because they are joining with the,
okay, we're talking about,
they receive a group of people from, retired people from an institution in Homestead, and they socialize with them, they help with them with arts and crafts which are taught at the home, and it gives them a sense of importance that the community isn't just doing for them, they're doing for the community. And this is just one of the innovations that Dr. Kelsen made him an important figure in the community.
Now, when did you decide to make the home your focal point of interest and put all most of your time and energy into it, and then take this presence?
Well, almost immediately, because after I met Mrs. Harris and become interested in the home, I realized the need there, and I started to work immediately. I used to do their address craft work for them on a hand machine that we had in various homes at different times because the home wasn't large enough to accommodate it. And I was quite in awe of older people at the time. My association had never been with older people, always been with my peers. And I was always a little hesitant about speaking my piece in front of them. Eventually, I think it helped me overcome this. And to this day, of course, I'm not a public speaker, and I never will be, so, but I don't have the feeling that I have in those days after getting up and being terrified. It came out of my mouth. And as I said, I continued to work in other organizations, but my heart was pretty cool. And then, of course, in 1939, my daughter was born, and for a short time, I did discontinue my work, but not for long, because I always had steady health, and I was able to get out. I felt like I should be here certain times of the day, and I wasn't, but other hours of the day, yeah, I spent between things and fortunately. And I always say fortunately for me, several women received me as president. That time, particularly Phil Walsh, who was a very outgoing person and was well known in the community, and she really had many membership drives where she included many women who were not interested in home before, and it became a very, very large organization. When I became president in 1954, it was a good-sized organization. I would say 4,000 women, and we had a junior organization for about 1,000 younger women. And next to the Hadassah was the largest organization for our membership. And previous to becoming president of the home, I had been a representative of the Conference of Jewish Women. I was a recording secretary for 2 years before becoming president of the home. I was president for 3 years. After the 3 year period, I decided that I had to use a little rest. Not a rest physically, but a rest from women in the organization. But decided to pursue a career in the business world. And as I said before, I really didn't feel I was qualified for anything very much. So my first venture was in a dress shop where I worked several days a week, and it wasn't too successful. I didn't like way the man did business. I think he was too honest, which he proved when I left him and gave him money on me. And so I decided to look for office work, and I worked for a plumbing supply office for about a year. Then I worked for Hamburg, worked for the side for 2 years. After that, I had to have major surgery, so I stopped working. And then 1960, my daughter got married. And after that, meanwhile, during all this time, after I had stopped working, which was 1959, I took on the main fundraising project for the Accelerate. It was the third annual event, and just had the 20th. And I still wasn't satisfied. So shortly after Joni was married, two friends of mine bought the house building in Quincy, and I was the woman of law, Jack Law Trade. I did the payroll, and I took the points, and I said, oh, I was the only one who got it. And I worked there for 7 years.
So you combined both, a professional career. It's interesting because you told me earlier in the interview that you were not trained or anything specific, and yet and you wanted to a career, so you wanted to found one.
When I was young, I didn't realize that a career is very important to a woman. Because as I say, in those days, it wasn't. I mean, there were always women who pursued careers and made a career a very important part of their lives, but I didn't feel that way. Yet when I got older and after I had done my share of organization work, I felt that I had missed something by not really being trained for something important and pursuing something. Not that I regretted doing organization work. I think everyone who gives a hand helps in his or her own way. But I really felt that as women do now. Careers should be important to women. Not all women are cut out for careers. But I'm not the type of person who can make the house a lifetime project.
Did you, that's interesting, it leads me to my next question. Did you raise Joan with that idea in mind, and therefore differently than the way you were raised with your mother's influence?
The only thing I can say about the way in which I raised Joan is that I always wanted her to think for herself. I didn't want to ever exert pressure on what she should do or what she should be. I wanted her to be herself and do what she wanted to do. And the result of this is shown right now. I mean, it wasn't easy for her, but she said, I went to college for a reason. I didn't go to college to stay home and watch my children and wait for them to come home at 5 o'clock and then sit with them and have nothing to do all day. I don't particularly care for organization work, although I have done my bit, and she has, and she still does. I mean, she will do something for each organization each year. If she has taken a job, much against the wishes of her husband, of course, he's hers. Takes it for granted now, but at the beginning it was very difficult for her, but she stood her ground and she said, this is what I want to do.
What kind of work does she do?
She does programming for the Jewish Cemetery. She started out as a nursery school teacher a few days a week when children were younger, and she has been working full time for the last 2 years.
Who is she married to?
Her husband. It's a Pittsburgh boy. His name is Sheldon Weinstein. He was a doctor. He specializes in psychology. He was trained in Presbyterian extremity. When he was through with his residency, they were stationed at the war, right outside of Washington, for 2 years. And of course, I thought that was quite a distance for him. But as soon as he got the army, he went to a partnership in Dallas. Her two older children were born in Pittsburgh. And the little one in Texas.
We had
one in Dallas. Two boys and one girl. The oldest was a girl. And the she's 13. She was just past Pitt Smith.
What is her name?
Ellen. Of course, she was pregnant. And the older boy is 11 and the younger is 6.
What are their
names? Craig is the older boy and Michael is the younger.
What about,